Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What happens when cop, con woman, and crimes collide? Wild Cards, coming to CW next Wednesday night. Creator and executive producer Michael Krinivez joins me next. Your next favorite series on Tubi and other multi-channel bundles may be the product of binge networks. We'll do a deep dive on this venture and what it brings to bundles next half hour with founder and overseer Bonnie Britterer. And the Primetime Emmy Awards for last season will finally get distributed live on Fox Monday night, hosted by Anthony Anderson. Our second hour starts with a rare live pre-Emmy chat with Television Academy President and Chief Executive Maury McIntyre. Also ahead, end of the TV line for topic, our classic trivia question, and welcome to the smart TV home hub era. That's our supersized takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented more than 45 podcast sites, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Our opening hour is brought to you by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry fade anytime. 46 degrees at the top of the hour, and we welcome you on this second Friday of 2024. The program all about TV's current and future. Big two-hour show in store for you. Thank you for tuning us in, wherever you may be. We got some wonderful guests coming away over the next 2 hours, and we invite you to be part of the program all the way. Give us a call. How do you do that? You pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is in business, so use that as well. Simon Apple 04 by name, that's the room, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. The creator and executive producer of Wild Cards, Michael Corribez, will join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Topic Studios, owned by First Look Media, will no longer have a TV unit. More than 20 staff members are getting their pink slips, and the television service playing on smart TV sets and devices of that name has been folded into a similar channel overseen by content distributor Kino Lorber. A company official maintains individual scripted and unscripted series currently running or in development will not be impacted, even with the absence of a standalone division. In addition, scripted TV investment will increase. Topic recently picked up a third season of HBO's award-winning series 100 Foot Wave and continues work on an Amazon freebie pickup of their adaptation, Savannah. Jennifer Hudson's daytime talk variety hour will move forward with a third season this fall, syndicated by Warner Brothers. On the other hand, Debmar Mercury will not go ahead with a new syndicated weekday series hosted by Ken Young. Reason? View station and time period clearances for the proposed talk variety hour. Now, quickies. CBS and Warner Brothers are exploring a young Sheldon spinoff series, dealing with Sheldon's older brother and fiance, played by Montana Jordan and Emily Osment. No comment from either party. Reels will keep On Patrol live on its weekend schedule through early 2025, at least more than 90 new episodes. 20-something ensemble comedy Snowflakes will get a pilot tryout at FX. Nick Kroll will executive produce. Netflix has landed Lawrence Fishburne to play a major role in The Witcher's fourth season. Filming begins this spring. Scripps News will premiere a pair of hour-long weekday programs Monday. Maine and Wall, focusing on economic matters, and The Race, exploring campaign development from the perspective of citizens across the United States. And Fox is developing an animated hour series from ElfQuest, the iconic fantasy comic book. Creators Wendy and Richard Pini will not participate in the project and have given it a thumbs up. And that is news notes for today. And now our first guest joining us live from Los Angeles, an Interrated exclusive, the creator and executive producer of the new CW series Wild Cards, which premieres next Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, is the creator and executive producer, Michael Krinivez. Michael, happy to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Tell us about Wild Cards. We've had a number of TV series over the years that involve a con man or a con person or a thief in some way. It takes the Thief, the Andre Braugher series that won him an Emmy Award on FX, and now we have your show.
That's right. Yeah, and as you said, it is a pairing of a con woman and detective, harkening back to sort of the Blue Sky era of USA, Castle, Moonlighting. It's one of those where the couple pairing, you want them to get together. A lot of laughs, a lot of banter, solving crimes, and a lot of heart.
Did those shows that you mentioned just now, the Blue Sky shows, did that inspire you to put this series together?
Absolutely. I mean, when I first saw the pitch for the show, It was, you know, just a couple of years ago, it was, my feeling was, and I was saying it even in the room, was like, we seem to have lost all those shows. All those shows went away. All the procedurals on TV were all pretty dark, very serious, and I just missed them. I really just, those are the shows that I personally love to watch, because I love the procedurals where they're just characters that are so engaging and so entertaining that that's what I remember. That's what I want to watch week after week. On any procedural, you never really remember the case a year later, but you remember what it's like to spend, you know, 10 to 22 episodes a year with those people. And that's exactly what I wanted to do with this.
You must be happy then, in addition to your show going on the air, not only on the CW, but also on Canadian television, that Suits, for example, has been rediscovered thanks to Netflix.
Exactly. It's honestly, it's just been, the timing has been just sort of very lucky, because like I said, even when I pitched in the room, I was like, people are going to want these shows again. You guys aren't making them, but they're wanting them. And it just sort of turned out to where now ours is coming out exactly at the same time as everyone is like, oh yeah, right, we loved all those shows. So what happened to them?
So get into the premise. We have a cop on the downside. We have a con woman who is trying to avoid being a jailbird. And then you have the crimes that they solve.
Yeah, correct. So the premise is you have Max Mitchell, who's a con woman, and you meet her in the beginning of the episode pulling a con, and then she gets caught. And she's brought into the station by a sort of down-on-his-luck cop who has been relegated to the Marine unit, sort of demoted. And he has to bring her to the station. And while in the station, she overhears the captain and all the detectives in there going over a current very large case. And by overhearing it, she actually breaks sort of the big first clue in the case that no one else has been able to. And she does it, and she basically uses her one phone call from jail to call this cop that has brought her in to say, go check it out. So they break the case first wide open together and are then partnered to solve it, because it's a big thing that's sort of dogging the police force. And at the end, when they're successful, they basically have a deal that's made with the commissioner, whereas if she helps the police to solve crimes, she could work off her probation. And if he does well, he gets promoted back to his detective desk. And that's how they're put together.
We're speaking with Michael Corvez. He is the creator and executive producer of Wild Cards. It's the first new CW scripted series of the year, and it premieres this coming Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, followed by the third season premiere of another show we've covered in this program, Family Law. Michael joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sign up with you live. We're just getting started. Big two-hour show coming your way. And by the way, I want to welcome those of you that are checking us out despite the blizzard and the crazy weather that's going on in the upper Midwest, that some of that is coming here to the New York metro area, New England, later tonight into early tomorrow morning to start the weekend. So we're happy you're along, and we'll keep you company as best we can. If you have a question or comment for our guests, make that call. The number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. As I mentioned, coming up our next hour, we will kick it off with an exclusive interview with the President and Chief Executive Officer of the TV Academy, the folks behind the Primetime Emmy Awards, Maury McIntyre. He will join us live from L.A., and then Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, yes, we will be on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we will have the whole hour devoted to the Primetime Emmys, which take place at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on your local Fox station, hosted by Anthony Anderson. Mark Berman, the creator-in-chief of the great newsletter, The Programming Insider, will join me. We'll make our predictions for the big awards, and we'll talk more about what we want to see with television, what we're looking forward to in 2024. That's coming your way Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Michael, when you have a premise like this, and you want it to be lighthearted and fun to watch, obviously having two people, one play the cop, one play the con woman, you have to have, A, the people you want to portray what you're creating, and also to have the chemistry. How long did it take you to find the actors who play those roles?
We went through a lot of people, and like you said, on shows like this, the honest thing about it is these shows live and die on the chemistry of the two leads. When you think of all those great shows that you mentioned, and like Castle or White Collar or Bones, all of that, that's what it is. So we went through a lot of people to finally land on Vanessa Morgan and Giacomo Giannotti. And I will say, knock on wood, if you can hear that, we hit gold with the two of them because they're absolutely magic together. I mean, they have phenomenal chemistry. It's everything we wanted. And it's worth spending all that time because that's what people tune in to see. You want to see, for whatever it is that makes those pairings work, and it's always a hard thing to predict until you really get to the floor and shoot it and you're there. That's what it is. And they're just fantastic together.
And both of them have CW credibility. Vanessa Morgan was on Riverdale, and Giacomo Giannotti was on Reign, which both had good runs on the CW, on the network you're on. How long did it take to get the chemistry once you got filming?
We obviously, before we started filming, we worked together. We rehearsed. We went through it. I would spend a lot of time talking with them just individually about everything, about the characters, about the tone, about the pace. And at the same time, you're hiring them as actors. You want them to do what they do. Like one of the things I tell actors when I'm doing a show with them is, now that I've hired them, the character is theirs. Like they own it. I'm handing it over to them. It's their responsibility now. And that goes from top to bottom to figure out how they want to play it. And even in the work, you have questions about the script. You come to me ahead of time. We discuss it. I really get involved with them a lot on a very deep level in terms of the scripts and the stories and what's going on with the two of them. But luckily for the two of them, to be quite honest, they're really, and I say this sincerely, they're really lovely, respectful, kind people. And they just got along really, really well from day one. And that honestly just helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. And there's a nice surprise also because you've got Jason Priestley, who we all know from Beverly Hills 90210, but we also know him because he was part of a similar type of show that ran on both Canadian television and here in the U.S. on ION for several seasons called Private Eyes. I saw the premiere of it. It was at the Paley Center when Private Eyes was, I think, in its second season on ION. And he is back. Of course, we know him as an actor, but also as a director. How were you able to land him?
We landed him. Partly it started because two of the producers on this show are the producers of Private Eyes. So they had a relationship with Jason, and so that obviously came up as a discussion. And he just fit in perfectly to be the character, the con woman, Max, to be play her dad. He's in prison throughout the first season because he's a con man and was caught doing a big job, and that's a bigger sort of serialized story that goes on. And Jason is just phenomenal. I mean, he just has this fantastic, really likable, charming quality that – one of those things where you have it or you don't, and Jason has it in spades.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the last season of It Takes a Thief, where Fred Astaire played Robert Wagner's father, who was also a thief. So hearing that it's a similar situation, like con man, like con woman or con daughter, it offers a lot of leeway in terms of how you create stories.
Absolutely, because it's the history about it is that it's a family business. He was a con man. He had met her mother, who was actually from a very wealthy family, and they fell in love. But the family, wouldn't accept him, so she left, and they became con people together. Then eventually had a daughter, and the daughter learned the family business. The mother died when Max was a teenager, and so she was left with her dad. And they have the best father and daughter relationship of anyone you've ever seen. They get along phenomenally well. They just love each other. Everything is great. He's genuinely a great father. Just happens to be a con man. And so throughout the series, her and her partner, Ellis, played by Giacomo Giannotti, they always go back to prison to talk to him to, consult on cases as well. So he helps them out from prison.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the crimes that early on our duo face?
So one of the things we did with this, and to try to make it a little different from these shows, because in procedurals, often the cases can sort of bleed into each other or whatever. And it's very difficult to make these shows, to do case after case. And so the character of Max, part of in her backstory is, as a child, if her parents were out pulling cons, she spent a lot of time alone. She didn't really go to school because they just traveled the world and were on the move all the time. So she was sort of raised on TV and movies and music, and so she's constantly using all these pop culture references just in her dialogue and from all eras. So one thing we wanted to do is that each episode has a slight nod to a certain either film or TV show from pop culture. So, for example, one episode we find a dead surfer, and that episode is our Point Break episode, but the story is sort of like Strangers on a Train. So it's Strangers on a Train meets Point Break. One of our episodes is someone from Ellis's past comes back and he's helping her transport a prisoner, and it's like a nod to the movie Midnight Run with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. And it sort of goes on like this. So every episode has a little pop culture sort of like touch point to it. So that also each episode is really bringing you into a very different and very distinct world in terms of the case, in terms of the way it looks and it feels, even the music nods to the tone it is. And it makes the overall show like really fun in that way, because every week you don't feel like you're getting the same thing over and over and over again. It's every week is quite different.
So when you have pop culture showcased in some way, albeit probably in a lighthearted way, in each episode, do you try to cast a celebrity that might fit that particular aspect of pop culture that's part of the plot?
In this season, we got to do that. So one of our episodes is a and this is also a nod since we are on the CW, it is a murder on like the set of a CW-style vampire teen show. So that would be, of course, something like The Vampire Diaries or Twilight, the movie. And we got Ashley Green from the Twilight movies to guest star in that episode as one of the producers of the show.
Mm-hmm. By the way, with Jason, is he going to direct an episode, or did he offer any, because of his work on Private Eyes, did he offer Vanessa and Giancarlo any ideas about how to play off each other?
I don't know if he offered them any ideas. I mean, I spent a lot of time with Jason. He's an extremely generous, like, actor and guy, and he's so likable and so kind. He's a total pro. He didn't direct this year, but he will direct in the future for sure. Jason's, as you may know, a very accomplished director, and he's done a lot of directing. And so that's actually something I'm really excited for. And because of that, also, he's great to work with. He's such a pro. He comes there. He knows everything. But he also really knows how a set works and what you need to make the scene work and what you need to shoot. And so, you know, guys like this, it's wonderful to have them, because things go even quicker with them, because they really know what they need to get done.
Michael Cornavez is our first guest on this two-hour episode of Tomorrow Be Televised, coming away on a Friday afternoon, 46 degrees, by the way, at the top of the hour. Nice and sunny here in New York, although we were supposed to get 1.5 to 2 inches of additional rain overnight into early Saturday morning. Michael is the creator and executive producer of the CW's first original scripted series of this year. It's called Wild Card, and it premieres this coming Wednesday night, 8 Eastern Pacific and Eastern Time on your local CW station. Also coming on that night will be the third season premiere of Family Law at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And if you have a question or comment on Mini Mix with Michael, make that call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. This is our second consecutive two-hour episode. Because we're going to give you as much time for our guests and much time for you to participate by phone or chat room, we will have only one commercial break each hour, and that will be near the bottom of the hour. By the way, we'll have three episodes coming your way next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, our third triple header week of this year. Again, on Monday, we'll devote it all to the Primetime Emmy Awards. Monday night, yours truly and Mark Berman, our popular guest, who's the interim chief of the Performing Insider, the popular email newsletter and website. We'll make our predictions for the Big Emmy Awards on Monday night on Fox, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time, depending on where you are. And we'll also give us our thoughts on how 2024 shapes up and the shows we're looking forward, the new series we're looking forward to seeing. That's coming away Monday. We'll also have episodes Wednesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. And you can also catch me on Wednesday mornings on Sports Newswire, talking the world of TV sports. At Sports Newswire, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, Amazon Freebie, Local Now, and other multi-channel bundles. Michael, talk about your writing team and directing team and how you're working with them.
Well, the show's made out of Canada, so all the writing team is Canadian. We had a fantastic big staff of writers, and the directing team also, everyone out of Canada. The pilot director was James Genn, who was one of the producers I know on Ginny and Georgia. That was the last thing he did before. He's been doing a bunch of The Good Doctor now, who really set a beautiful sort of tone and palette for the show in terms of, like, the smoothness. We had a lot of references. And, again, each episode we almost want a little sort of even cinematically, a little nod to the different genres that you're doing while keeping it consistent to the show, just having sort of a look and feel. And in the writing, It's a lot of that kind of like very quick banter, right? Like that's what these shows also like live on. So you're breaking a case, you're doing information, but in between that, it's always a lot of back and forth. I mean, every single day these actors had an enormous amount to do I have to say, and they were like total champions because it's a lot when you've got to do like 10 pages a day.
And I understand the writing team is pretty much 50-50, half male, half female.
Oh, yeah. I think we actually have more women on staff. We had quite a big staff this year. It also like sort of evolved as people changed. But, yes, our staff is incredibly diverse and definitely have more women than men on our staff, actually.
And because you're the creator, Michael, do you have like a marching order or sort of a top guidepost for your writing team in terms of how you want these episodes to go?
Of course, but you know, like as a team, I mean, I'm very much one that when I'm running the room, it's very much a group effort. Like with us, like I even like to like group write the episodes where everyone like sort of splits it up, like everyone writes a different act and you put it together. And so that over time, everyone is really learning the voice of the show because they're constantly writing it rather than on most shows. When you get your episode, you know, everyone breaks it together and then a writer goes off and writes the episode. And that, depending on how many episodes you have a season, you're probably only writing one, maybe two episodes a season. This way, everybody is sort of constantly writing because the voice of the show is so important. And then to what you're asking, the breaking of the episodes, sort of the marching orders of the tone, is a pace, making sure, you know, this is network TV show, so it's got to move quickly. You're working to commercials and act breaks, so you want to make sure you're always keeping there. The story always has to turn a lot. But everything has to always turn back inward to our two characters. Because in the end, we mapped out a big sort of very intricate, you know, there's a long con that goes on over the season. That there's a button at the end of the pilot that sort of gives you a hint to that Max is planning something. And so even though each episode is solving different crimes, she is planning this big long con that pays off at the end of the season. And then we're also building in this romance between the two of them that has to be this gradual sort of will they, won't they, as you have in a lot of these shows. That is the fun part. And you genuinely want to build, you know, that into the show in a way that you really want them to get together. And, of course, they, you know, will they, won't they? We don't know. You got to stretch that out. But where it really feels authentic. And with a show like this, when you're keeping it light, the thing is you want to keep it light and entertaining. And yet you also want to bring it down to earth. So you really feel them like they're real characters.
So there's really three sort of parallel plot points at play. There's the crime that's being solved in that particular episode. There's the overriding arc, namely the con that our heroine is out to play or try to play. And then you have the relationship arc. You know, where does this relationship go, both on the job and personal?
Correct. Exactly right.
I'm just curious, so with your writers, you know, how do you try to make sure that all three of those objectives come in from episode to episode so that, you know, while the crime is being solved or trying to get solved, you also have the other two parallel plot directions being advanced from episode to episode?
Sure. Well, we map it, you know, at the beginning, we map it out very carefully. So when you break the season, first we're figuring out, you know, obviously where we're going to go with that, like you said, that long arc of the con, then the long arc of their relationship. And then I also figure out every single crime that happens every single week in broad ideas in the beginning. So I know where they are so that thematically I can match the crime of that episode to where I want to land with their relationship at what point they are in the season. So I make a big map in the beginning of all that. So it's really all planned out for you ahead of time. So once you get into the nitty-gritty of, okay, hey, now we need to figure out what happens in episode 3, I know exactly where they are emotionally because I've already planned that out. And that's the big work that you do in the beginning, where you sort of map it out as a serialized show, even though it's not a serialized show, just so you can make sure you're hitting those moments within the episodes so you really are gradually building that and that feels that connectivity of that relationship and then of that long con. So a lot of work is spent doing that at the beginning, but it pays off later because then it doesn't feel like too disjointed.
Where do you film the series and why?
So it is shot in Vancouver. In Canada, it plays Vancouver for Vancouver. And Vancouver mainly because it is such a great landscape to use. Now, Vancouver, as you may know, they shoot a lot of things in Vancouver. And, you know, it's always hidden as to what it is. It plays sort of nondescript city. But you have the water, You have a major metropolitan city. You have countryside. You have mountains. You have very high-end real estate there. You have, you know, gritty streets. It's an amazing place to shoot. And in a show like this, where each episode is really, really different, I really need a variety of landscapes to access in the city. And so out of all the Canadian cities, it was really the perfect place to shoot it.
Mm-hmm. One thing I haven't talked about in a while with creators like yourself is the music and who does it and how does it fit into the series. And I know that in a lot of these past shows I mentioned earlier, it deals with con artists or thieves. There have been some pretty memorable scores. Dave Grusin's score for It Takes a Thief, Glenn Larson's work on with Stu Phillips on Switch, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who was your composer on this, and how does this person contribute to the musical motif of your show?
So we have two composers. We have Sean Pierce and Dave Genn. Sean Pierce has been around for a long time. He's a very experienced composer of television. He's done a lot of things. Dave Genn comes from the world of more rock music and rock producing. He's in a big band in Canada called 5440. And so that's more of his background rather than like scoring. And so we put them together because what we do is we do, you know, score like you would have in a normal TV show. And we discuss this, and I'll get to that in a second. But then also what we have, especially Dave do a lot, is because each episode does have its own motif and nod to something in pop culture, I always want little musical references sort of throughout that tip their hat to whatever that is, right? So, you're taking, for example, the surfing episode is a good example. You would want to have at one of the points when you're sort of going out to, say, commercial, you bring in a little surf guitar kind of thing, or something that sounds like the Chili Peppers, because that's very West Coast and very kind of like California, and you would have that. So each episode also, while it has its own sound, it does have its own shade and its own tone that is particular to the case of the week in that episode. And a lot of these con things, like you said, I mean, I would say most of the famous one in recent history is obviously Ocean's 11. A lot of shows, especially in the USA Network, like White Call and all that, used a lot of scores that were like that, and I didn't want to copy that because I felt that's sort of been done. So you're looking sort of for your own sound that's also not getting in the way of the show. That's kind of sometimes the most important thing. And the little tips of the hats, these things are really what sort of give it this real flavor week to week.
A lot of Canadian produced shows have found their way on the CW this year, Son of a Crit, Sullivan's Crossing, both of which we have the producers on our program. Has the show premiered in Canada yet? Any feedback on that? And have you already started to think, well, if we make it on the CW starting Wednesday night, let's go for a second season. Let's see how these characters go.
Absolutely. The show just premiered in Canada on Wednesday, on the 10th. So it's a week apart there. And thankfully, knock on wood again, the reactions and the reviews for everything have been phenomenally good. And so that's wonderful. So we, of course, hope for the same on the CW here. We have on the Canadian side, because on the Canadian broadcaster is the CBC, we have actually already started development room for season 2 to get ahead of ideas. Should we get renewed? Should we be lucky enough to? So we'll be ahead of the game for what season 2 is planned. But even at the beginning of season 1, to tell you the truth, I had already planned out the broad strokes of the long arcs of the cons and the long story, the big serialized story for the first 3 seasons. So we already had a framework for where Max and her father and then Alice the detective are going to go and how the story can keep, you know, moving forward and progressing and getting bigger and more exciting. And so now we're just fleshing out how to really do that in detail.
The first episode of Wild Cards premieres on the CW next Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on your local CW station. Check your local news for what that station is. And it'll also be running on the CW app as well. And on 9 o'clock next Wednesday, the third season premiere of Family Law. For more details about the program online, go to CWTV.com. That's CWTV.com. Wild Cards next Wednesday, season premiere, and hopefully series premiere. Hopefully a great long run too. 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on your local CW station, including WPIX here, Channel 11 in New York. Michael Cormier, thank you again for being with us. Congratulations on the early reaction in Canada, and hopefully the beginning of a great long run starting next Wednesday night here in the U.S.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Same here, Michael. Take care. Have a superb weekend.
Take care. You too.
Michael Cormier from Wild Cards joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow be televised ahead for you after this word from Sun and Swell. Have you heard? Sun and Swell is the first online grocery store with a fine line of healthy, great-tasting foods that come to you in plastic-free packaging. We're talking rolled oats, trail mix, apple pie bars, energy bites, banana chips, nuts, and mango. And every item, no matter what that item is 100% vegan, gluten-free, and free of added preservatives or ingredients. So if you're looking for a more planet-friendly pantry, just stop Sun and Swell. That's Sun and Swell. And when you do, you get 20% off site-wide. Just go to sunandswellfoods.com. Use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. That is 20% off your entire order when you use the promo code TELEVISE at sunandswellfoods.com. Promo code again, TLEVISED. When we come back, we will go live to St. Petersburg, Florida, and we will be joined by Bonnie Bruderer. She is the founder and overseer of a very interesting company called Binge Networks. Maybe a show that you are getting the like on Tubi or Philo TV or Local Now or another multi-channel bundle could come from her company. She will join us live in our next half hour, along with our final time with our current classic trivia question of the week. Seven prize could be yours, so get your thinking caps on. All that coming your way. And at the top of the next hour, we will have Maury McIntyre from the Television Academy previewing the Emmy Awards Monday night. All that coming your way after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You will listen to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reach over 1 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want to go behind the scenes in music, check out Behind the Scenes Radio Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's Behind the Scenes Radio this Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube. Welcome back to our second half hour of this super-sized two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott, I'm with you along the way from New York. Happy to have you with us wherever you're checking us out. We have more great guests coming your way in the 90 minutes ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Many people know in the world of television that if you want to get a show on the air and you don't want to have it on a broadcast or a cable network, you do syndication. You try to have a syndicator, go to local TV stations, the station groups around the country, and if you get the most possible around the country, you get on the air. Well, there's somebody out there and a company out there that's now applying that same syndication principle to multi-channel bundles like Tubi, Zumo, Pluto TV, Freecast, Philo TV, and so forth. It's called Binge Networks. And joining us live to talk about it from St. Petersburg, Florida, the founder and chief executive, Bonnie Bruderer. Bonnie, welcome in.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me.
It is very welcome to have you. Thanks for coming aboard. And tell us about how Binge Networks came to be.
So I started in the TV world. I used to have a cable talk show in New York City about 9 years ago and quickly learned that cable back then was dying and that this thing called smart TV was coming onto the scene. And so, you know, I have a background in internet startups, and I saw the parallel between what happened in the internet industry and what was about to happen in smart TV. And so I decided to create a way to be able to syndicate content and to use the smart TV networks to monetize, what be it a film, a TV show, or whatever type of content you have.
I've got to ask before we go further, what was the show you did here in New York?
It was called the Ask Bon Bon Show. It was a talk show interview style where I interviewed different authors, speakers, entrepreneurs, really just anyone interesting in New York City.
Mm-hmm. And then where did it play?
It was started on MNN Network, and then it was picked up on a Chicago network, an LA network, and then, of course, now, on all the smart TV platforms.
And MNN, incidentally, for those of you who don't know, is Manhattan Neighborhood Network. It runs on the cable systems in Manhattan. And it, for a while, ran Tomorrow Be Televised when we were a simulcast 10 years ago or so on what was Brooklyn Independent Media then, now Brick TV, and on YouTube. So thank you, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, for taking our show when it was in simulcast form. What do you think about, before we get into exactly the shows that you put on, what do you think about this whole world of multi-channel bundles, which are now, you know, showcasing all these new networks? And they're not all the all Murder, She Wrote channel, the all the Rifleman channel, the all, you know, Let's Make a Deal channel. Many of the services that are on these bundles, whether they are like Tubi or Zumo, or they're being done by the smart TV set makers themselves like Samsung, Vizio, et cetera, they're original networks with original content. that is put together by all sorts of different people and organizations.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's smart. I think it's on point, and I think it's the way that consumers want to consume content. And, you know, we've proven that for the last 9 years. And this year especially, we're pretty much betting the farm on the bundling. We actually just closed a big deal where as Verizon, T-Mobile, Vodafone, and many other telecom companies will be reselling our app as part of their bundle process. So, you know, I think it's really how people, consumers specifically, want to view content.
So my understanding is that Binge Network puts individual series, syndication style, on these multi-channel bundles. And by the way, Tubi has become known for creating its own original content. It's one of the few bundles that do. So first of all, what kind of shows do you work with to get them on these bundles? And then secondly, how do you make the distribution process happen?
Sure. So we have our own app. We run our own and operate our own network, just like a Netflix or Tubi or any other platform. We have about 15,000 videos and films with new content added daily. And so what we do is we operate that as its own entity where you can, you know, subscribe and view all that content. But then we also have a team that turns around and then repurposes that content to every single platform that will take it. So we have active relationships with 125 of the top-tier platforms from Netflix, Hulu, Tubi, Amazon Prime, like you name it. We've been working with them. And on a daily basis, we ask, like, hey, what are you looking for? Oh, great, you need horror movies, you need true crime. We've got these 45 titles. And then they will, you know, consume the titles that are fit for what they're looking for, and then revenue is generated, whether it's a fast channel with ads that play or Amazon Prime, you know, however we work with a partner, and then we give back 50% of that revenue to our content creators. So it's not unusual for a client to come and work with our agency, and within a month, you know, not only are they on our platform distributed, you know, to up to potentially 500 million viewers, but they could have been picked up, actually, in one case, I'm thinking of this film Dogsville. We got it placed on Tubi, on Amazon, and Apple TV Plus, and about 5 or 6 other platforms within the first month as a client. So we're very fast and very effective at what we do.
And you handle all kinds of shows, scripted, unscripted, lifestyle, made-for-TV movies, documentary series and specials. But you also, it sounds like you, from a moment ago, you also syndicate services.
We do. Yeah, I mean, that is really, we are an agency that works with the content creators to get them syndicated on as many platforms as possible. So, and we do that those two ways. We do that through including them in our network that's syndicated on a lot of different platforms, all of the major platforms, and then we also have relationships with the bigger platforms that we then take their content that they brought into us and get it, you know, get it licensed to those platforms. So, yeah, we do work with all kinds of films. We do manage one of the largest private catalogs with about 15,000 titles at any given time. A lot of those are films, documentaries. We have web series, you know, food shows. I call it kind of the YouTuber plus. So anyone that's maybe above you, not that you wouldn't put films on YouTube, but like someone that's a little bit more serious than an influencer or creator and has a good show or a film or series. You know, we work with clients that have one film that come to our agency and they want it to be placed on all the major platforms. And then we have clients that have 600 episodes with regular, you know, production schedules. So we can pretty much help anyone at any stage if they have decent production quality value content.
Bonnie Bruder is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. She is the founder and overseer of Binge Networks, and she joins us live from St. Petersburg, Florida, this afternoon on a Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sam, I'm with you up the coast in New York, 46 degrees at this very moment. Want to hear from you? Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And again, coming up after the top of this hour, we will be joined for an inter-radio exclusive by Maury McIntyre, the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Television Academy, the people behind the Primetime Emmy Awards, coming your way, finally. These are the awards were supposed to be given out last fall, postponed by the writers and the SAG after strike. Finally happening, hosted by Anthony Aniston, this coming Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on your local Fox station. And don't forget, we will be with you Monday, Wednesday, Friday of next week, our third straight 2024 week for a triple header. And coming away on Monday, It's all about the Primetime Emmy Awards. Mark Berman, our wonderful friendly guest from the Chroming Insider, the popular email newsletter website, he'll join me. We'll both make our predictions for the top awards given out Monday night, and we'll also give our thoughts about the shows we're looking forward to seeing early on, maybe later on, in 2024. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. How do content makers find you in terms of you being their distributor for their content?
Sure. So we've been around for a while. We're going into our ninth year in business. So we're known in the industry. We're at a lot, or if not all, of the trade shows, from MIP to NatP, all the conferences, we have a presence. And then we also have a lot of referrals, you know, people that have maybe been a guest on a talk show that is aired on our platform, and then they hear about Binge that way. And then just, yeah, inbound marketing, you know, people will find us through even an interview like this or a press release. That, as far as how individual content creators find us, is usually the way it happens. We also have a sales team that works on outbound reach, so she'll kind of identify shows that look like they might have potential and do some outreach there. And then, like I said, we just launched these huge partnerships with Verizon, T-Mobile, and other telecom companies. So people are starting to hear about us that way as well.
Give us one or two of, let's say, the most recent success stories of Binge Networks in terms of successfully placing the series or the movie or whatever on these bundles and on a mega content service like Netflix or Peacock or Paramount Plus.
Yeah, so I'll take a show. We have a show called American Dream, and it's a really great, it's sort of like real estate lifestyle show that goes around the U.S. and films in each city. And they had about, I think maybe 500 episodes when they came to us. They had traditionally been a cable show, sort of that paid programming cable, you know, where they're airing on certain, like a CBS or ABC, that they're purchasing cable time, and they wanted to break free of that or even just add in the streaming network. So they came to us as a client. Just last week, we got them placed on both Amazon Prime Video and Tubi with four of their seasons, so there's about 200 episodes, and then we have two more seasons that have just been grandfathered in on those. In addition, I think we have about 25 placements for that show on different FAST channels. So, you know, a few that people are familiar with, some that are a little bit more obscure, but we were able to make all of those placements for them. And then I'd say we have about five or six more smart TV networks like Discover TV. Those are all just off the top of my head, but those have all happened for this client because they came to Binge to get them into this world. And then, of course, you know, every month there are payments from all of those platforms, so they are receiving revenues on their content.
One of the toughest problems of TV shows and syndication is the marketing and promotion, especially shows that are being placed for weekend time periods. Because usually the stations do not promote, whether it's New York or L.A. or whatever. So in terms of weekday shows, they do promote them, particularly with help from the syndicators, whether it's Warner Brothers or Denmark Mercury or CBS Media Ventures, et cetera, et cetera. Once you get a show placed somewhere, how do you work with the bundles or a service like Netflix or Prime Video or whatever to make sure that the show gets the kind of publicity, marketing, promotion where a viewer can know, hey, the American Dream is on X bundles or X places?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it's so critically important to get viewers to the content, right? Getting it licensed is one thing, but then people need to watch it for revenue to be created. So a couple of things. We educate our content partners, number one, first and foremost, on how to let people know where they can be found. We're constantly sending links every time something goes live. We also have our own internal marketing that we do, from our email list to daily social media posts. And other mechanisms for getting the word out there. But really, if I had to boil down to the essence, like our secret sauce is really the partnership. Whatever industry partner we have, we're relying on that audience to help get viewers to that content. So we're very strategic in who we work with. We know the big players like a Tubi, like an Amazon Prime. Of course, they've got millions and millions of subscribers, and that's really going to benefit our content partners. You know, we're less concerned on getting somebody on an obscure network that nobody's heard of and then relying on them to promote versus let's go for the big guns and make sure that, you know, anything that we can get, if we can get them a feature, a mention, the recommended content spot, anything like that, then our company will do that. So it's sort of a secret sauce that we've mastered, but really the word is partnership. It's all about, okay, where are we going to put this content and what audience do they already have so that this will, you know, fit nicely into their catalog and get viewers for our content provider.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the services, like 24/7, what some would call the free ad-supported or fast channels that you represent?
Well, we work with over 125 of them, so I wouldn't have time to go through the whole list. But the bigger names that people are familiar with are Netflix, Hulu, Paramount, Pluto, Amazon Prime, you know, Tubi. Did I say that one already? Those are the main ones that people know. And we also work with Local Now. We work with, there's over 50 different fast TV channels that we work with. But again, pretty much any freebie, you know, anything that you're watching, like if you're a consumer and you've paid anywhere from $2.99 to $14.99 a month to watch your content on an app, you can pretty much assume that we're working with that platform.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any nibbles from advertisers who either A, want to sponsor individual shows or series on these platforms and also maybe come to the table with their own shows? I know that a number of major ad agencies now want to be in the content making business.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually sort of moved away. So every relationship we have, every partnership that we have, the ad relationship is baked in. On our own network, we're approached daily by advertisers wanting to serve ads on our content. We've actually moved to being a subscription model because personally, I believe that's what makes the consumer happiest, right? People are tired of watching commercials every few seconds. Although some of these bigger platforms are very successful, quite frankly, it's annoying. So we've moved to subscription within our own network. We do take some, you know, like we have some interstitial ads, we have some sponsorship opportunities, real estate, things like that. But again, when we work with an Amazon or a Tubi or anyone like that, the ad relationship is already baked, which is huge because you don't have to worry about going out and finding advertisers and making sure that, you know, those ads are running on your platform. It's more, we work at the content level, which is sort of the higher level, making sure that, hey, you just tell us what content you need that your viewers are looking for, and then they worry about serving the ads.
Mm-hmm. Binge Networks is the venture we are talking about this half hour on Amavi Televised. And our guest from there is its founder and chief executive overseer, Bonnie Berterer. She joins us live from St. Petersburg, Florida, this half hour on Amavi Televised. In a moment, we'll ask Bonnie whether people who want to create new scripted and unscripted series are using her venture as a test bed for it. And also, how does Binge want to expand? For example, maybe take on funding a new TV series if they find it, let's say, a Tribeca or a Series Fest or a Catalyst or any of the other TV festivals. We'll get to that shortly, and we want to still hear from you. So give us a call on our Many Mints with Bonnie, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04. My name. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll have our classic trivia question. Last time we're offering the current question, 7 prizes in play. You could still be our first classic trivia winner of this year. And then after the top of the hour, we'll go to Los Angeles, and we'll be joined by the president, chief executive of the TV Academy, the person behind and the organization behind the Emmy Awards, coming prime time to Fox on Monday night. Host Anthony Anderson, Maury McIntyre, all coming your way in the hour and change ahead, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So has any, you know, series or specials maker interested in putting a series together come to you and said, I'd like to use the pilot of my show and use your wherewithal as a test bed to see how people might react and whether I should go forward with the project?
They have, yes. We have had quite a few shows that have used us as like secure distribution, right? So if somebody has a pilot and they go to a producer and say, yep, we're interested in producing, but we need guaranteed distribution, we can say, absolutely, we can assure you that we're going to have you on these, you know, 100 platforms. So that's one way people have worked with us. We've also been very successful in helping support people get grants. A lot, again, same sort of idea, but there's a lot of countries like Canada and Greece is very pro production. And if you can show, hey, I've got this project idea and I have guaranteed distribution, then there is funding that you can get there. We've also been able to help clients secure a second season. So, for example, we had one show. It was called Tokens. It was a Canadian production, and we had it on our platform. And we ended up selling it outright to a company called Urban Flicks, and that helped them get the funding for their second season. So there's all different kinds of ways, aside from the ROI that we can bring on your, you know, content and revenue share. There's many different things that we can bring to the table as far as whatever your distribution and production needs are.
So how do you want to expand Binge this year? What's on the agenda?
I mean, so our biggest thing is the partnerships with all of the telecom companies. So essentially, and that rolls out next week, starting on January 22nd. You'll start to see some press releases and some information about that. But basically, let's take Verizon, because that's one of the partners. They have 320 million subscribers. When you buy a phone, a lot of times they'll say, hey, here's 5 free apps you can choose from. Binge will now be one of those offerings. So you'll be able to choose like Calm, Netflix, Binge, Disney, ESPN. That's going to be the major, that's our major focus going into this year. There's 72 different telecom companies that are part of this deal that we're potentially going to be working with. So that will be huge for us in growing our subscriber base. We also then, of course, pay back a percentage of that subscription revenue to our content partners. So that's going to be tremendous from a monetization standpoint. We also are looking to, of course, always bring in new clients. So, you know, new web series, new films, things like that. We are always looking to up-level our film catalog. But those are really our main two initiatives. Like, my focus is 100% on these telecom partnerships and growing, you know, that subscriber base to the, you know, millions of subscribers to Binge.
Mm-hmm. As you know, we are now seeing more and more film festivals become homes for TV series pilots, whether it is Sundance coming up later this month, whether it is the New York Film Festival ran a TV pilot this year for the very first time. Tribeca does them, Dances with Films, also in L.A. Have you been going to some of those festivals and trying to see, well, maybe there's a TV series pilot here, scripted or unscripted, that we should take on?
I have, yeah, and we have, in fact, brought on quite a few shows from that world. One of our shows, After Forever, it's a winner of 6 Daytime Emmys. They were just recently featured in the, can't remember what it's called in Atlanta, something, the Out Festival. We have a handful of shows, actually, that come from the festival world. We were just one of the sponsors of the Greek International Film Festival in Canada, which happened a week after TIFF. I've been president at TIFF and quite a few of the other film festivals, especially in New York City. So yeah, we do get, you know, we do get quite a few clients that way. And again, you know, the challenge with film festivals, they're great and it's fun to have an award and to put that on your press kit. But unfortunately, a very, very high percentage of people don't go any further than that. So we don't think that's right. We think that you should be able to make money on your film. You know, in addition to my TV background, I was a filmmaker. You know, made documentaries and a number of different documentary TV series. And it's really, really hard to get it monetized. And that's why we created Binge. I just didn't think that that model was right, or that you should have to wait quarters or years or, you know, sometimes multiple years to get your money back. So yeah, we're always open to, you know, fresh new ideas and ways to get content and including, of course, the film circuit, the film festival circuit.
And let's not forget also there's a TV festival circuit. There's Series Fest in Denver. There is ATV in Atlanta, ATX in Austin, Texas. South by Southwest is doing more in the area of television.
Yeah.
We had Cerebral, both in L.A. and in New York. Have you gone to those festivals, and are there plans to sort of deepen the relationship with them as we're seeing more and more independent pilots getting made, especially by people of color?
I have, yeah. I've been at actually almost, I think, all of those that you just mentioned. You know, for us, we really come in at the point of finished product. So, you know, pilots are great, but that generally would be probably years away from where we need the client to be. We can literally take somebody that has a film that's already aired at a festival or has a series or has a show, and within, you know, 24 to 48 hours, we can have them on our network. And then usually within a week or two, we can have them licensed to the premium platform. So that's really our focus, are people that have stuff in the can, ready to go, and are, you know, looking, chomping at the bit to get on those platforms.
I forgot to mention, do you work with content makers who are trying to get their shows funded by Bitcoin, by cryptocurrency, by crowdfunding or equity crowdfunding?
We have in the past. You know, again, as long as you have a finished product, great. Like, we're not in the development stage. We're not producers. We don't come in at that area. We're finished product people. So we are really for that person that has their film done, they have their series done. We don't really care how they funded it or how they got there, but we can take it and get it distributed and monetized for them.
Let's complete on this, Bonnie. Where do you see this whole expanded TV world going, especially given the fact we now have artificial intelligence and a lot of people think that this could be a way that not only will people create shows and produce shows, but also the fact that smart TV sets and smart devices have artificial intelligence software in it, whether it's generative AI, ChatGPT, et cetera, that will allow people to watch and use the television set in an interactive way. And we're now hearing about the in our final half hour, we're going to get into the big story that came out of CES 2024 this past week that has huge implications for television. So we'll get into that a little bit of a heads up, too. But how do you see this whole environment growing or going 2024 on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, 5 years ago, again, we've been in the industry for 9 years. So we were pioneers back in the day when no one knew what we were talking about. Smart TV, what are you talking about? Now it's pretty much in, you know, everybody's vocabulary. So I definitely have seen explosive growth in the industry over the last, you know, 5 years. Everyone and their brother has launched a streaming service. I think we're going to see a big consolidation. We're already seeing that with huge acquisitions, you know, with Paramount is buying, I can't remember if they own Pluto or Tubi, but most of the streaming companies out there now are owned by bigger parent companies. So I think you're going to see more of that consolidation, and I think you are going to see more features and services added. You know, it was really interesting. Over the holidays, we stayed at an Airbnb, and it had Netflix logged in. And so I was being served content that was so different than what I would watch because it was whoever owned that content. And it was so fascinating to me. Even though I work in this industry, I'm around it on a daily basis, I'm just served what they think I'm going to like, and I watch it, and I'm happy, and that's great. But I thought, oh, my gosh, this is so fascinating. I'm being shown all of these things that aren't me, but – you know, it's because whoever, Bob, Andrew, whoever Ted, Netflix was, that's what the algorithm was showing. So I think that's only going to get more and more specified. I think we're going to start to see, you know, product purchases or, hey, you like the watch that someone has on that show, click here and you can purchase and Amazon will have it on your door. You know, things like that I think are going to be very quick within a few years. And, yeah, I mean, I just think it's where everybody is consuming content.
It sounds like you may be distributing interactive content before too long, interactive series or specials or movies.
I don't know. We'll see. We've got our hands full with all we have in the hopper. You know, it's we have a very, very strong niche and a very, you know, we stay in our lane. We have a very good thing going here. We're, like I said, we manage one of the biggest private catalogs. We're working with 120 or actually 150 of those tier one companies and about 300 other smart TV networks. So that keeps us busy.
Mm-hmm. If you want to know more about Binge Networks and the formula that presents on multi-channel bundles and on services like Netflix, Paramount Plus, Peacock, etc., here's where you go online. Try Binge, BINGE.TV. That's trybinge.tv. Bonnie Bruderer, founder and overseer of Binge Networks, thank you for joining us. Amazing venture you've carved over the last decade or so. And I hope that we can maybe at some point cover some of the individual shows you're running. If there's a very interesting show that's getting a lot of carriage on the companies you're working with, please let us know. We would love to have the creators of those shows on our program. And it's been great to have you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Bye, everybody.
Take care. Have a super weekend, Bonnie.
You too. Thanks, Simon.
Bonnie Bruderer from St. Petersburg, Florida, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Before top of the hour, let's give you our final time with this classic trivia question we've been offering for the last 2 weeks. And if you're first with the correct answer, we have 7 great prizes for you, including the 2024 American Express Pocket Calendar, the free Uber card from AMC Networks, the free Redbox Movie Night card from Crackle Connect. We've got 2 wonderful CDs, Chicago's Greatest Hits and Lifetime Women in Rock, and 2 books, Running the Show, Television Inside, by Emmy Award-winning writer, showrunner from Northern Exposure, Jeff Melvoin, and Apocalypse Television, How the Day After Helped End the Cold War by USC professor David Craig, who was on our show, like Jeff Milvoin, this past fall. And that's all be yours if you know the answer to this question. Who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? Who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? We're talking about the character's name for that program that ran from 1955 to 1960 on CBS Big Favorite. You can see episodes now on YouTube. Find out more at Wikipedia. Who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First convict answer, you win. If you've been a previous winner or a guest in this program, you're not eligible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, post a question tomorrow morning on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. One more time, the question, who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's the email you use, and you could be our first winner of 2024. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. Do so, and all the very best. Coming up next, our live exclusive interview with Maury McIntyre, the TV Academy's president and chief executive officer. He joins us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. It's www.blogtofree.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love old mystery dramas that have a terror or suspense tone to them, check out Eerie House today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. It's the show all about great radio drama of an eerie nature. Eerie House today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best BTR always on YouTube, 24/7. Welcome to the second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on a Friday afternoon of 2024. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 46 degrees, mostly cloudy here in the Big Apple. We've got another great hour to go, and we have a very special guest coming away in a few moments, and we want you involved. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. Your catch goes to the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room business for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. This hour is brought to you with one commercial interruption only by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. And now joining us live from Los Angeles in a rare internet radio exclusive, the president and chief executive officer of the Television Academy, the folks behind the Primetime Emmy Awards, coming your way Monday night on Fox, host of Anthony Anderson, Maury McIntyre. Maury, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Simon. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. Congratulations on 10 years in your role with the TV Academy and your 11th Emmys also.
Thank you so much. We're really looking forward to this year. It's going to be a very exciting one.
Before we get to that and all the excitement, what is the Academy's goal for 2024, given the TV environment that we're in, with more networks than before, multi-channel bundles, the possibility of interactive TV, the possibility of what I'm going to talk about after your interview in our final half hour. What is the Academy's role this year?
So the Academy's role, as always, is actually to bring together the television industry to kind of talk about what the direction is and how it is evolving. You know, we were founded way back in 1946, and at the time it was really just a forum for people who were just getting into television to talk about what could television be. And we continue in that role these days. You know, we've taken on more than that. We're over 25,000 members strong. But we really are a place for every member of the industry to get together to kind of discuss where we're going. And I think after the year we've had last year, it's even more imperative than ever that we're kind of sitting down together. Television is one of the most collaborative arts. And we're a group of people that, you know, get stuff done when we're working together. And that's really our goal for 2024.
Mm-hmm. Did any of your members go to CES 2024 this week in Las Vegas? And if so, what kind of feedback have you and your fellow Academy members gotten from that?
So I know a number of our emerging media programming governors were there at CES. They said it was a pretty exciting show this year. I haven't had a chance, unfortunately, to talk with them in detail because we've been very focused on getting the Emmys up and about. We had both our Creative Arts Emmys were last weekend. We've got the main show this weekend. So my focus, unfortunately, has not been on what happened at CES, but hey, looking forward to seeing what's come out of it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to the Emmys. First of all, is there a collective sigh of relief that finally, the show that you were supposed to come out with last fall got postponed because of the strike by the Writers Guild and Screen Actors Guild after that, finally, Monday night, it all comes on?
We are so excited to finally be able to present the 75th Emmys this year. I mean, I think that, you know, look, there was a collective sigh of relief across the industry once we got through the strikes. I don't think the award show was top of mind. I think we wanted to get the industry back together and back working. So as far as, you know, I've talked to a number of my connections across productions and networks. They are just so thrilled to be back up and running. The TV industry got back very, very quickly. I know many, many series shows were already in production well before the holidays happened so that we could get new series, new episodes out for the audiences. But, of course, we are just as thrilled that it enables us to actually celebrate all of the phenomenal work that had happened prior to the strikes. And that's really what the 75th Emmys is going to be about. All of the shows from Succession to Only Murders in the Building, all those great nominees that we had that have been just kind of on hold since the strikes happened, we're able to finally get together, acknowledge their great work, and give out some Emmys.
Maury, how did the postponement from last fall give you time or impact your thinking or the Academy's thinking about what do we want to say to the viewers, to the public, with this 75th Emmys? What kind of message do we want to deliver to the viewers and watching? The viewers that it's like without them, there would be no you.
Absolutely. We, you know, I think we've been very consistent with the message that we were hoping to deliver for the 75th, regardless of the strike. We're just happy that we're able to do it now, but the strikes didn't necessarily affect what we were looking to do. You know, we are an organization that has been around for 75 years, which is about the length of time that television has been around. Television is a little older than the Emmys. But television is a medium that just has such power to affect social change in the world. And part of our celebration of 75 years is a celebration of that power. We actually just released today a listing of the 75 most impactful TV moments as judged by the Television Academy that coincided with, you know, this celebration of 75th Emmys. And those are moments like the landing on the moon, which was awe-inspiring to the entire world, to moments that moved us. You know, the 9/11 attack, we were all glued to the television and mourning with New York as we were experiencing that real time. But it includes such phenomenal work as all of the work of Norman Lear, from All in the Family to Maude to Good Time, to Ellen DeGeneres coming out on national television and really uplifting the voices of the LGBTQ plus community. And that's the power of television. And I think we've seen that over 75 years. We've seen that throughout Emmy winning programs throughout 75 years. And so the Emmys themselves for the audience, we want to bring that celebration to them, that celebration of the impact and power TV can have and the entertainment value it has had for so many millions of viewers over the years.
Mm-hmm. By the way, for those who haven't gotten the word about it, can you name the top ten moments?
I can name some of the top ten moments. So the very top one is actually the lunar landing. You know, I think there is no more moment that kind of inspired the world than what happened in when we landed on the moon. Also up in the top ten, the Martin Luther King speech. His speech, "I Have a Dream," just really empowered the black community and the entire civil rights movement. And again, just shows kind of how television can be used as a medium to spread that message. The Beatles, the first landing of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, which really catapulted the Beatles throughout America into superstardom. And I think that, you know, it's one of those things that really resonates as you look at all of how music has been used television to get its message across the world. We celebrate, you know, the beginning of Sesame Street, which has been around since the late 60s and has educated just generations and generations of television viewers. So it's a phenomenal list. I encourage anyone to look at it on Emmys.com.
We're speaking with Maury McIntyre. He is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Television Academy, formerly the Academy of TV Arts and Sciences, the folks that handle the Emmy Awards. And this year there's two primetime Emmy Awards. The one that was scheduled for last fall got postponed because of the actor and writer strike. That's coming your way in your local Fox station on Monday, the 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, hosted by Anthony Anderson, and then the one for this current season that will be taking place in its usual September time slot. Maury joins us live from Los Angeles as everybody is getting together for the event, and he's with us live in an Internet Radio exclusive right here on Swabby Televised. Simon, I've been with you from the other side of the U.S. of A, New York, 45 degrees at this point in time, nearly quarter past the hour. Let's hear from you. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. And coming up later in our final half hour, our special supersized takeaway of the week. We think this is the story out of CS 2024 that may very well be the takeaway of the year. We are talking about Welcome to the Smart TV Home Hub Era. That's coming up in our final half hour this afternoon. Maury, how do you showcase the anniversary? Is it going to be through video clips? I've heard there may be some reunions coming up. What can you tell us about the format of the show?
Well, we're really wanting to focus on some key moments from television's history throughout the show. We have a phenomenal host in Anthony Anderson who grew up on television. He's going to open the show with a musical number talking about how television helped raise him along with his Mama Doris. Mama Doris will be with him as well. But from a reunion perspective or from a nostalgic perspective, we are recreating some classic themes, one from I Love Lucy. We are gathering some, you know, really just beloved cast. We have almost the entire cast of Cheers will be coming together for a reunion. We're honoring shows that are currently still on the air. Grey's Anatomy, there will be a large contingent of the cast from Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy's been on the air now for over two decades. So we really want to run the gamut of, you know, shows from the 50s all the way up to current shows as well, and really just celebrating that love. You know, we've got presenters who are going to be presenting with some of their icons. Quinta Brunson will actually be presenting with the inestimable Marla Gibbs. And we're really excited about Christina Applegate will actually be opening the show. And then right after her, she will throw to one of her, the women she looked up to the most as she was coming into television, Carol Burnett. Carol Burnett, I'm sure, is going to just be a phenomenal presence on that stage as we celebrate 75 years.
Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking of the anniversaries, Grey's Anatomy is celebrating its 20th season. Don't forget Law & Order Special Victims Unit next Thursday starts year 25. So I'm sure there's people in New York hoping that Mariska Hargitay and gang will be celebrated too.
Yeah, you know, we actually had Mariska on last year as well with Chris Maloney, and we were really happy to be celebrating all the procedurals at that point. Procedurals have been such a long history of television. They're some of the most watched, most beloved franchises that we've got. So definitely want to make sure that we are covering and honoring all of them as well.
Mm-hmm. Talk about Anthony Anderson's role. Obviously, he's done it all in television. He's currently hosting his second game show, We Are Family, which is running, by the way, Wednesday nights on Fox. But also he's done comedy with Black-ish. He has done drama with Law & Order twice, the original run and then the current run that was started a few years ago on NBC. Why was he picked? What about him said, like, this is his time?
You know, we've actually discussed having Anthony as a host for a number of years. When we were on ABC a number of times, we had those conversations. He actually did do our nominations announcement one morning, I think about 7 or 8 years ago, and he was one of the best nominations announcers we've ever had. He's just so exuberant. He loves television so much. So, you know, he's one of those names that we've talked about for quite a bit. I think it just coincided this year that, you know, with his launch of a new game show on Fox, Fox was starting to work with him, and he just seemed a natural fit to bring him on board at this time. As you mentioned, he's so multi-talented. He certainly has comedic chops. We've seen that very clearly through Black-ish. He's got dramatic chops, which we've been thrilled to see. And he's also kind of a song man. You know, he will be actually, I think, playing the piano and singing a little bit during this show. So he brings all of those things to this just natural exuberance he has. And he's got also such a great affinity with so much talent across the industry. They all love Anthony. They all love working with Anthony. So as soon as you announce him as host, you've just got his friends coming out of the woodwork wanting to be with him and wanting to help celebrate the show with him. So it was kind of a perfect melding right in time for being on Fox and the 75th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Is he getting what kind of support or what kind of coaching is he getting in the host role so that he's able not only to reach the people in the theater, but more importantly, reach the people in the audience, reach the people at home? Because it sounds like one of the things you're out to do with this 10th anniversary presentation is we want to do more in terms of reaching out to the viewer and make the viewer that, you know what, it's about honoring the art, but it's about engaging them in the art, which has been an issue with some award shows in the past few years, which has led to, for many cases, lower viewership.
Right. You know, hey, he's a very personable guy, and He loves the public. I don't know that he needs a lot of mentoring in terms of how to reach out to his own audience. I will tell you, he is personal friends of Cedric, the entertainer, and Cedric hosted the show 2 years ago, so I do know that the two of them talked. Cedric talked a little bit about, you know, kind of what he went through when he was hosting the show, what worked for him, what he felt really connected with an audience, and so the two of them have talked quite a bit. I know he's been working a lot with Jesse Collins Entertainment, who's the producer of the show. Jesse has done a number of these award shows, some of them, you know, it's a huge acclaim. So he's having lots of good conversations with Jesse about kind of the stuff we're doing. And I think that the planning that is going into this show in terms of ensuring that there is something that will touch and reach every member of an audience that is watching the show really is going to be what pays off when the show happens in order to reach those audiences.
Mm. One thing I wanted to ask you, Maury, is I sort of hinted that there has been this issue with a lot of award shows, Oscars, Emmys, Grammys, and others, that in the process of honoring the art, that when some viewers watch the show, they feel like they're not being respected. They feel like the jokes are flying over their heads. There's too much inside baseball. There's too much political posturing. And some may remember the last time there was an Emmy Awards, in the fall of 2022, you had the scene where Will Arnett brought out Jimmy Kimmel lying on the floor of the Emmy stage, plopped in the center, and he stays there while Keita Brunson gets a well-deserved Emmy for her work on Abbott Elementary. And it comes over the viewer as it's taking the focus away. It's like, why, kind of thing. Has there been a lot of soul-searching about that and about how you make the show with things like you're doing more friendly to the viewers, that they feel like their respect and their appreciation for the medium is respected as much as the people who are watching in the theater?
Absolutely. I mean, we have these conversations every year with whoever the new producer is on board, or if it's a continuing producer, we want to learn from things that we've done in the past. You know, we have these conversations with our networks. We're unique. Unlike other award shows, we actually change networks every year. Because we're a celebration of television, we feel we kind of need to be on different channels each year. So we're on Fox this year, but we'll be on a different network next year. So the network, you know, we were on NBC last year when that happened. I will say that it's always a balance. You want to make sure that you are entertaining for the audience. You are respectful of the talent in the room as well. You're honoring the excellence of the work that they've done. You want them to have freedom to express themselves. You know, Cheryl Lee Ralph was brilliant last year in her acceptance speech. You want more of those kinds of things. Yet you want presenters who are going to have some fun too. Sometimes those presenter bits may fall flat, and we all just have to accept that. There are jokes that happen. Sometimes jokes are good. Sometimes they are not. We really wanted to focus this year, though, on the celebration of television. So I think this year it's not necessarily about a gag or a joke. It really is about bringing some of these, you know, together that are very beloved so that we can remember why we love these programs. It's about bringing in presenters who are going to honor kind of that legacy as we celebrate new shows that we're honoring this year, et cetera. And so, you know, I think we are really trying to walk that balance of making sure we are entertaining for the audience. We are not speaking above them. We're not getting into the politics of things. We're not, you know, looking to make news in any way in that regard. It's really about our love for television, the history of television, and how much it has entertained us over the years.
And Cheryl Lee Ralph, by the way, was one of the great highlights of the last Emmy ceremony. In fact, I had a chance to talk with her. I was in the virtual press room and talked with her, and she was very, very open about the fact that Abbott Elementary really was had a big impact on the Philadelphia school system. And a big impact on her because she has members of her family who are educators. And it was that show that helped get funding for some of the schools in Philadelphia.
That's amazing. And, again, it just shows the power that just true entertainment can have. Abbott Elementary is a truly funny, entertaining show that does have a message. And, actually, that message can impact, you know, the school system, which I think is fantastic. I think Cheryl is also just the epitome of – that's the kind of moment you want on an award show. Someone who comes up who was truly inspired by, you know, the role that they had, but can be inspiring to others by their win.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with Maury McIntyre. He is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Television Academy, the people behind the Primetime Emmy Awards, 75th edition, coming your way Monday night on your local Fox station, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. It is live to all time zones. And by the way, if you missed out on the Creative Arts Emmys, which were given out over the past weekend, you can catch FXX this coming Saturday night, tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on FXX, and we'll tell you how to find out more about the winners of those ceremonies in a little bit. So I'm back with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Maury, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. I want to raise one other point with you, Maury, and it deals with this issue of how do we treat made-for-TV movies. It used to be the made-for-TV movies was one of the great genres, could really, in terms of scripted television, hold its own along with comedy, drama, and miniseries. Some of the greatest moments of television came out of those films, like Brian's Song and My Sweet Charlie and The Execution of Private Slovak and Promise and My Name is Bill W. and so forth. And in recent years, despite the fact that there's more made-for-TV movies being made by more networks, by more services, you have the made-for-TV movie category off the primetime show, and where there used to be separate categories for actors, writers, directors in made-for-TV movies, now they have to compete against miniseries. What do you say about that controversy?
So I'll have to go back and check, but I actually believe that the actors did always compete together. I'm not sure they were ever split up. There was actually even a time when the movies and the limited series ended up getting put together because, in the early 2010s, we weren't actually seeing either one of them being made a lot. We've certainly seen an explosion over the past decade of both of those genres. Look, we as the Academy, try to evolve with the industry. For 75 years, we have grown as the industry has grown. And I think that part of that is an ebb and flow as we see, types of genres come into prominence or sometimes fall a little bit by the wayside. We have a certain number of categories that we can include in the telecast. And sometimes that means other categories will fall out of the telecast as we find a reason to put something new in. You know, reality as a genre didn't even exist 23 years ago, and we had to really expand the Television Academy to accommodate reality as a genre. It only has, I believe, one category right now in the telecast, and that's reality competition. We've had to look at our variety programming. You know, it has changed quite a bit over the past 10 years. We're trying something new this year with something called scripted variety versus the talk category. It used to be variety sketch and variety talk. So things like that, they change. And one of the things that did get affected by that was the television movie. For a period of time, the television movie did not have kind of the quality, if you will, that we're seeing come back to the television movie over the past couple of years. So it is definitely something we'll keep talking about. We may see it come back in. Part of us looking at the telecast is to try to figure out what is going to be the most entertaining again for an audience. It just so happens, I don't think I'm revealing anything because it happened last Sunday night. This year, the television movie category was won by Weird, the Weird Al Yankovic story, which is a phenomenal piece from Roku. And Al Yankovic was there at the ceremony for the Creative Arts to accept that award. And it was so incredible to see him up on that stage. He is so humble, yet he has such a powerful message about people being true to themselves. So, you want those kinds of moments. It would have been perfect in the telecast. It's hard to know how that will pan out. But I could certainly see it come back into the telecast in the future. I think the other thing that was really funny about him winning, that I think the person who accepted before Al came up and basically said, "We're saying we just won Best Picture." And from our purposes, they did. They won Best Picture that was on television, but it was still Best Picture. So there is a bit of an arrogance about some of the movie director things that we don't want to be seen as television movies. We are, movies, and we have just, the quality of a movie that is now playing on television with all the streamers, et cetera, that are out there. Sometimes matches what we see in theatrical releases as well, I think. So we're going to keep looking at that. I could see it very easily come back onto the telecast. We do not feel that we have put it in a place that does not give it relevance because we feel that all of the Emmys have stature, whether you're in the creative arts or in the telecast. that it's not reaching necessarily the same audience, and we acknowledge that.
Yeah. And congratulations, by the way, to Roku and everybody involved in that film. I believe it is the first made-for-TV movie Emmy winner that was commissioned by a smart TV set or a smart TV device.
It absolutely
is. More of a huge breakthrough.
Yes. It is a huge breakthrough for Roku and those services.
Mm-hmm. So what beyond the Emmys, what's the game plan for the Academy? What other activities can we look forward to from your organization?
Well, we are a 365-day-a-year organization. As I said, we represent 25,000 members, and we are growing. We are coming out of these strikes, so a lot of what we are doing this year is kind of trying to figure out how to give back more to our members who have just come through a very difficult period in the industry. How can we help them network more? How can we help them get back on their feet? Another big initiative for us, you know, we've been for the past several years really focused on diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, both at the Academy and across the television industry. As I mentioned at the top of the interview, you know, we see ourselves as a forum for the industry to get together to talk about some of the things that impact the entire industry, and diversity is one of those big things. We host, you know, now biannual summits for all of the professionals who kind of focus on DEIA across the industry to come together to really talk about how much progress is being made, how can we improve that progress. So that is a key focus for us. We actually just changed our leadership. So every 4 years, we generally elect a new chairman. We have a new chairman coming in. So our outgoing chairman, Frank Sherma, will be doing the last of his duties at the 75th Emmys on Monday night because the 75th competition happened under his watch. But after that, Chris Abrego, who is currently head of Vantage America and has just started his own company, Hyphenet, will be taking over. And we know Chris will have his own thoughts in terms of the direction of the Academy and how we want to keep moving forward. But it really is focus on our members, a focus on how television is evolving, how we can help our members evolve with that. As you said, you've got a huge, you know, conversation coming up about smart TVs and all of the new ways that television is being consumed and created, and we need to help our members keep up with that.
Are there any plans to do events beyond Los Angeles, let's say in New York, Chicago, Silicon Valley, Texas, other parts of the country, maybe in conjunction with organizations, let's say like the Paley Center for Media, or in conjunction with a festival like South by Southwest or Series Fest?
Yeah, so we do partner with a number of festivals around the country. We've had conversations with South by Southwest. We were there a couple of years ago with a panel on emerging media programming. We generally do have panels at ATX, the festival in Austin. We have our sister organization, which is the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, and they're based in New York, and we've had a number of conversations with them about co-hosting panels and events there. We do generally do a number of New York panels, usually through our four-year consideration events, and those are panels and things that happen. They're produced by network partners who are wanting to get Academy members and sometimes members of the public aware of the programs that they do, and we've seen a number of those happen in New York. I know Atlanta is another big area for us in terms of growth, as well as for our membership. We have a number of members who are in the Georgia area that we want to make sure that they have programming for as well. So it's something we're going to keep considering doing. I will say that, you know, the pandemic changed a lot for us in terms of how we do programs. Most of our programs now, we do try to, if not stream it live, we try to capture it so that it is available to all members on our viewing platform afterwards, so that everyone, no matter where they are, whether they're working or whether they're in, you know, other areas of the United States, are able to partake in some of those things. But we do know one of the key aspects of membership at the Television Academy is actually getting together and meeting other members and networking and building your network with professionals. So it's something we're really excited to do and excited to do more of throughout the United States.
The 75th Emmy Awards come your way on your local Fox station this Monday night, hosted by Anthony Anderson, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, live to all time zones in the United States. So check your local Instant Fox station in your area. For more details about the program online, you can go to fox.com. You can also go to emmys.com to check out the nominees in every category. And for more details about what the Television Academy does year-round, go to televisionacademy.com. That's televisionacademy.com. Don't forget also tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on FXX, it's the Creative Arts Emmy Roundup Special. And for more details about that program, FX Network. Maury, we have wanted for a long time, in the 16 and a half years we've been on the air, to have somebody from TV Academy on. You are the first. We deeply appreciate you coming on right before your show on Monday night. Thank you so much for coming. Congratulations on a great decade heading the Academy, and your 11th Emmy coming up Monday night. It's been a great pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much, Simon. Have a great weekend.
You too. And I'll be in the virtual press for Monday night, hopefully checking out the action and hopefully speaking to some of the winners too. It'll be a pleasure.
Hope to see you there.
You too. Have a super weekend, a super ceremony.
Thanks so much.
Maury McIntyre from the Television Academy joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When we come back, our supersized takeaway of the week. Welcome to the Smart TV Home Hub era. We think it's one of the most important takeaways, not only this year, maybe this decade. And we'll have it for you after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. In honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, a very special program comes your way tomorrow night on Blog Talk Radio, celebrating Dr. King. It's a very unique program, and it comes your way tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. That's celebrating Dr. King tomorrow, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best BTR 24/7 here on YouTube. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Alban with you live from New Haven, New York, 45 degrees at the bottom of the hour. We have more coming your way. We'll give you another chance to get into our classic trivia question. And in just a moment, we will have a very special supersized takeaway of the week. Welcome to the Smart TV Home Hub era, an era that may have begun this past week at CES 2024. But first, a message from our sponsor this hour, BlendJet. If your blender is bulky, a super pain to operate, I got an idea for you. Give BlendJet the opportunity to make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks an easy pleasure. Easy, you might think. You know, BlendJet is so portable that you can work up a smoothie of any shape or size you like at the office, your favorite flavor, your favorite protein booster at the gym, or a super poolside margarita. BlendJet is quiet to operate and rechargeable on the go. So what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today. Be sure to use the promo code TELEVISE to get 12% off your order. By the way, it's now running and available at a super low price for this new year. So you get 12% off your order, a current low price, and on top of all that, free two-day shipping. That's right, free two-day shipping. So again, go to BlendJet.com, use the promo code TELEVISE, get 12% off your order at the current low price, and free two. It's a steal of a deal, a deal that can help you blend anytime, anywhere with BlendJet. Now it's time for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, where we showcase a development or two that takes place during this week that we think will impact how you watch and use television in the days, months, and maybe even years ahead. We think what we've got for you today for this takeaway of the week is so super impactful that we're going to spend most of the rest of this half hour and this program to talk about it. We call it Welcome to the Smart TV Home Hub Era. And I would love you to participate. Give us a call, use our chat room, give us your reaction to what you are about to hear. For decades, there have been two of what we call holy grails in television. And by the way, every business, every industry has what we call the holy grail, the super aspiration of what they'd like their business to have for the benefit of the American public and the world at large. And in the case of television, two holy grails. One is that interactive television be available to the masses, the kind of interactivity that impacts every aspect of your life, from the ability to pick and choose programs that you actually control which way the plots go or the characters go, to the ability to play video games on your smart TV set or device without having to use a console like a PlayStation or an Xbox. You control it with your voice, a voice remote, your gestures, or a joystick that you point directly at the TV set, or the ability to order products and services anytime you watch. And again, you use it through the TV set without having to use a smartphone, a tablet, a PC, or a QR code. Well, that holy grail is getting realized. It really started to burst last year, and it looks like it's going to burst wide open this year in all sorts of ways. The other holy grail that people in the TV industry have discussed, explored, mused about for decades is the idea of your television set being your center point to control, to monitor, to get up to speed on all the other aspects of your home or apartment. The ability to trigger your microwave oven, your washer-dryer, your refrigerator-freezer, your garage door, your home security system, to see who's at the front desk or the front doorbell, to adjust the room temperature, no matter what room you're in, to perhaps get a feedback on how long it'll take for your washer-dryer to get your clothes done, to go from the wash cycle to the rinse cycle, and much, much more. Well, it looks like that era is going to start happening by the end of this year. And it's all because of what was announced by at least three smart TV set makers during CES 2024, still going on in Las Vegas, 130,000 plus people attending, 4,000 exhibitors, 1,000 plus startups, and continuing through this weekend. And those three companies, those three smart TV set makers that have declared already, we are going to have a smart home hub on our smart TV sets this year, are LG, TCL, and Samsung. In the case of LG, what they announced was, we are going to do a smart home hub on the TV set, on our TV sets, that is connected, powered by a life solution platform we call ThinQ that incorporates generative AI into the process. And that's the big thing, by the way. AI, whether generative AI, ChatGPT, other forms that are already being used into smart TV sets and devices that allow you to use audio features like Google Assistant, Siri, Alexa, etc., to do many things with your television set interactively. That's what we're talking about, to have that AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning, be powered to make the smart home hub happen. And what they want to do is, in addition to offering the way you manipulate individual appliances and services and manage your energy, they also want to do what's called 3D home view, which is a 3D visualization of the home that you can control different parts of the home in different ways you want. And that's on top of a number of announcements they made. They sort of hinted at it last week at CES, dealing with what they're doing with their smart TVs in terms of new apps. For example, it will allow one app that's just been announced called Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y, will empower people to offer access to 200,000 courses, 3,000 subjects, over 75 languages, all through the television set. In addition, some LG smart TV sets have just started or will soon start an interactive service called ABC Mouse, which many children now use on their PC or their smartphone or tablet. For ages children 2 to 8, and offers thousands of individual learning activities, again, through the television set, in all sorts of subjects, reading, language arts, math, science, health, social studies, art, music, an incredible learning experience, plus more interactive content from Ping Pong Company involving songs and stories. Plus, there's also an interactive Baby Shark world, all of this using the WebOS platform. And that's just for kids. Plus, LG has offered a game hub. They started it last year, and they're adding more, including a blockchain game platform known as WeMix Play, where you actually get Bitcoin rewards for playing the game through your television set. And by the way, all of this is being done with a new remote control LG is calling their Magic Remote. Really amazing. Plus, also, because of artificial intelligence. LG sets are now going to be offering yoga classes, fitness classes, self-care, nutrition, possibly dance classes, all hyper-personalized. Plus, they're also going to give you the opportunity to create your own art gallery with collections. Incidentally, that's being done by Amazon Fire TV using generative AI, and they've taken it one better. They are also allowing Amazon Fire TV users, whether it's the set or the stick, to create your own video art and display it on the television set in very stunning quality. So that's what LG has declared it's going to do. Now with TCL, they are going to be involved in a project called TCL Home Office or Home Console. That's going to be their smart home TV hub. And again, it will be the console. It will be the starting point for you to monitor, oversee, and trigger the various smart home apps that you can get through TCL appliances. In addition, TCL is also very soon going to be launching TCL TV Plus. It is their own multi-channel bundle with more than 200 channels. Plus, they will introduce interactive programming. We believe scripted and unscripted using a technology they developed called IDEO. IDEO. So that's TCL's move. And then Samsung, which may have put together at their press event on Monday afternoon, 5 o'clock Eastern time, maybe the most ambitious of the smart home hubs. What they want to do, and they've been working on for some time, is to use their operating system for their smart appliances called SmartThings and to use a connection point with their smart TV sets, one of the most widely distributed sets in the United States and the world. And in particular, they want to put together a screen called Daily Plus. And it's a screen that will allow you to do all sorts of things with your television set. Here's what they said in their press release. With the TV functioning as a smart home hub or smart things hub, your television turns into a seamless control center for all your connected devices. Your TV can now effortlessly detect your smartphone, turning it into an instant remote, eliminating the hassle of searching for multiple controllers. And this Daily Plus panel will allow you to do more than just manage your smart devices, view your cameras, and even ring your phone, and then answer it somewhere in your home. It will also allow you to adjust your temperature, check out the remaining time you have to cook a recipe in your microwave oven, or get your laundry out in your rinse cycle, and do other things, like give you the latest weather report personalized for your area. Or if, let's say, you want to set up an appointment with your doctor or your veterinarian if you have a pet, you'll be able to do that through the television set with your voice or with a special remote. Again, using the hub, this Daily Plus. And there also, by the way, is going to be another part of it called Now Plus, which will automatically sync with your television set to guide through all sorts of music sources. It'll also give you a summary of how your home is working or not working, including your security cameras, and how you're consuming all sorts of energy. And adjust it with your air conditioner or your thermostat, so forth. Maybe even if you have a robot operating in a smart home fashion throughout your home or apartment, connect it right to there and turn it on, turn it off, and so on. That's the idea of Now Plus. And again, Samsung is saying that SmartThings, Daily Plus, Now Plus is going to be available in your smart TV set before the end of this year. And again, Daily Plus could be very, very special because it could also lead to other applications, the ability to make reservations for your restaurant, an entertainment event, to get tickets to a Broadway show, local theater, dance performance, and so on. Get your airline reservation tickets. Maybe even bank or check out your financial status. And maybe sports betting. The ability to bet. That's right, place a bet on your television set. There is one more smart TV announcement that happened at CES 2024. And incidentally, what you've just heard, there was not much coverage by the tech press, by the businesses networks, the cable news channels, and so on and so forth. So a lot of this you may be hearing for the first time directly through this program. Now, I understand we have a call. We're going to take the call in a second. And then I want to share with you about a big announcement that came out of Telly, the super smart television set that's out to be the iPhone of television. But right now, we're going to take this call. Hello, you're on Smarty Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hold on for a second. Let's try again. Let's see if we get our caller. Yes, here we go. Hello, you're on Smarty Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Go right ahead. You're on the air. Hello. Hold on one more second. Let's try one last time.
Hello.
Hello, you're on Smarty Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Just call back.
Yeah, just call.
All right, I'll tell you what. Call back, and as soon as you call back, we will get you on. And if you want to call and react to what we just talked about in our supersized takeaway of the week, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. I want to remind you, while we wait for our caller to call back, and maybe you to jump in too, coming your way, we have 3 episodes next week, our third triple header week in a row for 2024, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And coming your way on Monday, our hour is going to be all about the Primetime Emmy Awards Monday night. Mark Berman, the editor-in-chief of the Programming Insider, the popular website and email newsletter, he'll join me. We'll make our predictions for the big awards handed out on Monday, and we'll also give us some thoughts about which shows we are looking forward to seeing in 2024. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Tell It. Okay, I believe our caller is back. Let's see if we finally have that person. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, my name is Jacob Sartorius. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I love to shove big, fat, fucking In-N-Out hamburgers up my asshole, and I just wanted to say, go fuck yourself.
Well, thank you very much for the call, and I hope you like the In-N-Out burger, and do appreciate it. And sorry that to all of you listening in that happened. But I'm happy that he's interested in what we're talking about, the whole idea of the smart TV home hub. And as I mentioned before that call, there's one more announcement that was made at CES 2024, and it was made by Telly, which we've been covering for the last 5 months. In case you don't know, that is the smart TV set that is being independently offered free, a set that would has a dual screen, picture for two-thirds of the screen, one-third information, everything from the latest news, sports scores, headlines, stock quotes, et cetera, with an interactive ad on the lower right-hand corner of the screen. It's getting a lot of attention. The idea is that if you want to get the set free, you have to give them information about yourself so they can personalize the information on that one-third of the screen, and then you get the set for free. And it's currently running in about 10,000 homes around the country. The early word is terrific. And right now, Telly is showcasing it at CES 2024 to not only potential advertisers and possible programmers, but also dealers who may want to showcase, like Best Buy, Costco, et cetera, that may want to offer the set along with other models in their stores around the country. Now, Telly has been telling us through Dallas Lawrence, their chief strategy officer, in 2 interviews we've done on this program last year, that they want to become the iPhone of television. They want to, as time goes on, give you more apps that are interactive, everything from the ability to place bets in various sports, the ability to play video games. There's also video chat. And all sorts of other applications. At CES, 2 days ago, they announced that they're going to present on their set the ability to just say, hi, Telly, I want this, I want that, so forth, using ChatGPS. That's right, ChatGPS. And again, you use your voice or voice remote to just say what you want to do, like take me to this show or take me to this the latest stock market quotes. Or give me the ability to make a restaurant reservation, or get tickets for this, or let me check Credit Karma and see what my credit score is, or maybe even down the road do online banking and shopping, ordering products and services. Let me make an appointment for Angie, or HomeAway, or get my groceries delivered through Instacart, or food through Grubhub and so on. Well, their avenue to do that, and maybe their avenue to trigger their own smart home hub, is through this new voice system using ChatGPS. And we understand that they may be the first smart TV set device to use ChatGPS. We will see. Bottom line is this. The Holy Grail is in front of you, the viewer. If LG, if Kelly, if TCL, if Samsung, and other smart TV sets and device makers get behind them, we may very well see the beginning of the smart TV home hub era in a mass way. Maybe. Because what's going to be very important going forward is that this isn't just a press release and that's it. This isn't just a showcase at CES 2024 this week in Las Vegas and that's it. So I have a message for LG, for TCL, for Samsung, for Kelly, everybody else. If you want people to use features, if you want them to have your smart TV set become as big or bigger than other smart home hubs, you have got to market and promote them and demonstrate them all over the place. You've got to use television messages to make your case. You've got to be at events. You've got to do demonstrations here in New York, in Chicago, in Texas, around the country, LA, Silicon Valley, and show people that this is in fact happening, that this is something they can use and it's easy to use and it will benefit them and make a difference in their lives. If you don't do that, then it's another example of a service that goes out, that goes in one ear and out the other. So the clock is now ticking. You're on the countdown. Your ventures happen. And once you do, make them available. Make them available widely and stand and demonstrate behind them. Make the case that this will benefit the public, you and me. And if you do, TV will enter an incredible new dimension, a holy grail that will take your watching of television, your using of television, way, way beyond this year and this decade. And that's our takeaway of the week. And once again, CES 2024 continues into the weekend. You can check out the Consumer Technology Association website for updates on what's going on down there. And we hope, by the way, next week or the week after, to have Jeff Minsky, the Media Village correspondent who covers technology, who is at CES, we speak, to come on the program, as he did last year, post-event, tell us his thinking of his perspective of what's going on. Before we leave you today, let's give you one last time with our classic trivia question for those who missed the first hour. Here's the question. It's the last time we're offering it, seven prizes in play. Who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Oh, I want to welcome Showman James into our chat room. Thank you, Showman, for coming aboard. You have a question or comment, particularly on either any of our guests or what we just mentioned, or Ted Wake, please put in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906, and you will get it to you. Anyway, once again, it's the question, who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? We're talking about the character's name on that very popular 1950s show on CBS, ran five and a half seasons. Who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? Email me with the answers, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name, where you're emailing from, and if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question starting tomorrow morning on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon WT. This is our last time we're offering the question on this program, and I would love to have, before this weekend is out, or today is out, our first trivia winner of 2024, and that can be you. One last time, who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, and hope you're the winner. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. Do so, and all the very best. Before we go, two shout-outs to two people who are wrapping up their current careers in television today. One is Roger Lawson. He is the PR representative for Ovation, the Performing Arts Network, and Arts Network in general. Roger was a wonderful executive there. This is his last day. We worked with him on a number of segments we covered when it came to with Ovation and also Journey, which is one of the first networks to be presented on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. The other is Angela Sullivan. She was the head of corporate communications at GAC Media, the folks behind Great American Family, as well as Great American Pureflix, which is the network they acquired from Sony. Sony does remain a minority investor in it. On Monday's show, we brought to you Dan Merchant, the creator and showrunner of Going Home, the hospice drama that is now in its second season on that service. And by the way, the second episode of that program is tonight on Great American Pureflix. Angela, unfortunately, was one of the people who were laid off in a budget cut earlier this week. So to both Roger and Angela, thank you both very, very much for what you've done with your respective services, and wish you the very, very best in what new TV role you will take on in the near future. And I hope it's going to be sooner than later. Remember, when one door closes, another door usually opens sooner than you expect it. So to Roger and Angela, all the very best in the next round of your TV career, whatever it may be. And to all of you, we want to thank you for being on today. Thanks to all of our guests for making this episode happen, and all of our guests all week. Remember, Primetime Emmy Awards, Monday night, hosted by Anthony Anderson, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, live to all time zones on your local Fox station. And on Monday afternoon, we'll be joined by the wonderful Mark Berman, the Plumbing Insider Editor-in-Chief, and we'll be making our Emmy predictions for the big category showcase that night on Fox. Plus, we'll give you some thoughts about the shows looking forward to seeing the rest of 2024. That's Mark Berman, the Plumbing Insider, our special primetime Emmy prediction episode of Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific on Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We will be live, and we want to get your predictions too, so make sure you bring them to us by phone call or chat room. We'll also have episodes Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised, and we have some guests in the hopper. Remember, if you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and our wonderful 45-plus group of great podcast platforms like iHeartRadio, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and so many, many more. Love to hear from you what you think about our show today. What's your thoughts about the Emmy Awards? What's your thoughts about our takeaway of the week? And what came out of CS 2024 and TV's current and future? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum. Extra Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. However you respond to me, I respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Dave Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new and great podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. These 2 hours of Tomorrow Be Televised has been brought to you today by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, and mixed drinks on the go, wherever you go. And by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. Use our promo code to order at checkout and get a wonderful discount off your order. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We will meet you on Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Primetime Emmy Award Night, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our web and podcast affiliates. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And remember, let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with you. Until the next time, stay well and
stay tuned.